podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome along to the Punt podcast ahead of the action this weekend. Later on in the podcast we'll talk about the misery on the Mersey with journalist Jerry Cox. We'll also discuss Jose Mourinho's dressing down of his players following Manchester United's humbling at the hands of Huddersfield, and we'll question whether Jurgen Klopp is ever going to invest in a defence. Pete Farris, Gav Puchlowski and Al Ross will give their best bets in the Football League, and Alex Dunn will give his best bet in Europe. But first, as ever, Derek McGovern joins myself, Dave Kellner, on the podcast. Good afternoon to you, Derek.
Good afternoon, Dave. When you mentioned the misery on the Mersey there, I thought you meant me for a second.
I'd never do that, Derek. I'd never do that.
They were shocking Liverpool, weren't they, at the weekend?
Oh. It was,
you know, the only crumb of comfort is Everton are even worse at the moment, so it's a bad time to be in Merseyside.
And making his debut on the podcast, standing in for Andy Excel this weekend, it's William Hill's in-play deputy football product manager, Michael Jones. Mike, why have your job titles all got ridiculously long names?
I've got no idea. I think people just want to sound important, don't they?
Mike, your team's Wolves and they're doing well this season?
Yeah, had a really good start. I mean, there's been a lot made in the media about sort of the amount that's been invested in the team. Really, it's a couple of players and a lot of loan signings, but they're really sort of kicking on and becoming a team that play good football. And they can defend as well. Got one of the best defences in the league. Just really impressive so far this season.
As long as your jokes are better than Andy's and your tips are better, you're more than welcome on this podcast anytime.
I'll do my
Mike.
Best.
Let's get stuck in then. We've got Manchester United versus Spurs to kick things off. Kickoff is 12:30 on Saturday. Manchester United 5-4 to win this game. The draw 23-10 with Tottenham 11-5. Enhanced odds, Romelu Lukaku to score and Manchester United to win was 21-10. That's been enhanced to 5-2. And Harry Kane to score and Spurs to win was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 100-30. Manchester United, the home form this season reads in the Premier League: 4-0 against West Ham, 2-0 against Leicester, 4-0 against Everton, 4-0 against Palace. But Mike, as I said at the top of the programme, they come into this on the back of that shocking loss against Huddersfield last weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's not a match that anybody would have gone into thinking, really, that Huddersfield would have beaten Man United, given the way that they've started the season, particularly putting a few goals past some of the lower down teams in the league. But yeah, it's an interesting match because, like you say, Man U have got really good home form and Spurs have got really good away form so far this season, and neither of the teams seem to concede many goals. So it'll be interesting to see how it turns out when we come to the match on Saturday.
What's your prediction?
Well, you might accuse me of sitting on the fence a bit, but I've gone for a 1-1 draw, I think. I can't see there being too many goals. That's probably the kiss of death, and we'll see a hat-trick for Kane and Lukaku. But we've seen most of the money so far on Man United being the home side, potentially. But on the flip side, you've got Kane, who's been by far backed heaviest for first goal scorer. So a bit of a mixed opinion, I suppose.
Harry Kane to score first in the game is available at 7-2. I find this an intriguing match, Derek, because we all know how Jose Mourinho approaches these games, particularly away from home. And the 0-0 draw is available at 9-1, which might tempt a few. And I think Spurs are a better side, Derek, when they have a team coming onto them. There's no guarantee Manchester United are going to play with that sort of expressive attitude on Saturday against Spurs.
Well, they won't. That's absolutely cast iron guarantee that they won't. I mean, the manager, we know what the manager's MO is. He spent a few bob in the summer, but his best signing was a free Ji-sung Park bus. I mean, his attitude in these big games is terrible. United, just you mentioned all those goals he scored, but they were against crap teams. They don't score against teams in the top six. Remember, David, a few years ago, the word when you were watching Sky Soccer Saturday, the word you really wanted to hear was Jeff Stelling saying, there's been a goal at Old Trafford, and it hasn't gone the way you might think. Well, now you definitely don't want to hear that, because when he does say there's been a goal at Old Trafford and it hasn't gone the way you might think, it means United have scored, because they just don't do it against the top six. Spurs will win this. I think they're a far better team than United. They're in better form, and the performance against Liverpool, arguably Liverpool made them look great, but they did a real number on Liverpool. They've got a great manager. Mourinho is yesterday's man. Pochettino is the opposite. Mauricio Pochettino, he's yesterday's woman. No, I mean, he's the future. You know what? In three seasons, he turned Harry Kane from Paolo Wanchope into Paolo Rossi. I mean, he's done an unbelievable job with that striker. And I can't understand how United are so... I don't think you'll take a penny for United at 5-4. Spurs, everybody will be on Spurs, and Spurs won't be as long as they are now come kick-off time.
Might respond to that because you've seen all the cash from Manchester
United.
Yeah,
I mean, it has been more towards Man United so far.
What?
I mean, I can have a look when I get back up to the office, but I'm pretty sure we'll still see the money for Man United. It's the brand, I think, a lot of the time.
I can't believe it.
People see them as the home side. So, again, that's probably a strong argument for why they're favoured. And being a close game, they tend to pull those out the bag in general. But you might be right. We might see a bit of a collapse in the Spurs price, but I don't think they'll be much shorter come kickoff.
Okay, on to Bournemouth versus Chelsea next. 5:30 Saturday. Bournemouth are 9-2. The draw 16-5 with Chelsea in the betting at 8-13. Enhanced odds: Joshua King to score and Bournemouth to win was 8-1. That's been enhanced to 9-1. And Alvaro Morata to score and Chelsea to win was 13-10. That's been enhanced to 6-4. Chelsea have won their last three meetings between the two sides pretty handily by an aggregate scoreline of 10-2. But Bournemouth famously won, Derek, at the Bridge back in 2015. And Chelsea, albeit they came through midweek against Everton and beat Watford last weekend 4-2, they were unconvincing, I thought, against Watford in particular last weekend, Derek.
They were, and you know, I think Andy, who's missing this week, he would have been on the show had Watford had won that game as he deserved to, because it was his nap, his very brave nap. After 70 minutes, I'm thinking, he's going to be uncatchable in the league table now, the nap's table. They were excellent, Watford. Chelsea were poor, and they weren't that great against Everton midweek, but I don't count that because it's a League Cup tie. But they won both games, and I tell you what, you know, Ronald Koeman got sacked this week from Everton, and he'd taken Everton from 7th last season to, I think, the 17th in the table this season, or maybe even 18th. Bournemouth have gone from 9th last season to 19th now. And yet Eddie Howe, no word of criticism aimed his way. Why is that? Is it because he talks nice? Looks like a geography teacher who wouldn't shout at you if he didn't do your homework? I don't understand it. Eddie Howe, you'd imagine he'd untie his shoelaces before taking his shoes off. Eddie Howe, that's the kind of man he strikes me as. Doesn't look like a man who would inspire you. Bournemouth, the only side Everton have beaten since August. That's how bad they are. Chelsea will win this all day long. Absolute certainties.
8-13 could strike some people as a decent price here as well, away from home. If you're looking for a goal scorer, by the way, if he starts, Jermaine Defoe is 2-1 to score any time. He's the only player to score in the Premier League against Chelsea for four different clubs. He's scored against them for Spurs, West Ham, Sunderland and Portsmouth. And his next goal in the Premier League will be his 200th goal in league competition as well. So if you're looking for one of those quirky stats to tie in with a goal scorer bet, Defoe is 2-1 to score any time in this match. Mike, in terms of the market and in terms of where you expect to field money, is it going to be all for Chelsea in this one?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, even though they didn't look too convincing against Watford, like you say, the last two meetings with Bournemouth, they've really put them to the sword. But, I mean, so far this season, Bournemouth haven't been in great form, but they've actually only conceded more than two once this season, which was away at Arsenal. So you might well say, well, Chelsea are in the same sort of realm as Arsenal, so they might well put a few past them. But Chelsea have been in mixed form themselves and haven't been great defensively. So, I mean, I think potentially for me, the price is a little too short on Chelsea.
Right, okay.
I don't think personally it would be something I'd be looking to back, but the pick I've gone for this game is actually Chelsea to win and both teams to score, sort of tying in with Chelsea's defensive record. I just think Bournemouth might well, on the break, score, and Watford showed last week Chelsea aren't invincible.
Alex Dunn here. Just before Dave goes on to the Sunday televised games in the Premier League, just interjecting with a bet for you in Spain on Saturday. It's their nap in Europe this week, as far as I'm concerned, and it's Sevilla who take on Leganes. Sevilla 8-13, the draw 13-5, Leganes a 5-1. I'm taking Sevilla minus a goal. Sevilla, who haven't been in sublime form so far this season, but we know how good they are at home. They lost just once at home in La Liga last season, and though they have been having a sticky time of things of late, their last three defeats have been on the road. At home, they remain pretty formidable. Leganes have started the season really well, have only conceded three goals so far, but I think that's all going to come tumbling down on Saturday. Sevilla, I fancy to win minus a goal. You could back them to win to nil, that's tempting, but I think minus a goal is the way to go, and Sevilla minus a goal is priced at 13-8. The European nap this week on the punt.
And now on to Sunday's games, and we've got Brighton versus Southampton first at 1:30 kickoff. Brighton 11-5 to win it. The draw is 11-5 with Southampton 13-10. Enhanced odds: Glenn Murray to score and Brighton to win was 9-2, has been enhanced to 5-1, and Manolo Gabbiadini to score and Southampton to win was 14-5. That's now 3-1. What a result for Brighton last Friday night, beating West Ham in the London Stadium convincingly by 3-0, and it was thought that that win set the clock on Slaven Bilic's tenure at West Ham. But given West Ham came back against Spurs midweek and won that game 3-2 astonishingly at Wembley, maybe Bilic has got a little bit more time at West Ham. As for Southampton, they've actually won more Premier League away matches in 2017 than they have at home, but they did manage a win at St Mary's on Saturday night with Sofiane Boufal's wonder strike, enough to deny West Brom a point.
Yeah, it's a good job he scored that, because it was an incredibly drab match.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? And nothing happened apart from that, Mike. Interesting game, and I say interesting when I mean I've no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think there's kind of that kind of consensus from the betting public as well. We've seen a lot of bets on the draw. The most back correct scores 2-2, so
right, okay.
People sitting on the fence a bit. Both of them in very mixed form and not many goals in the matches that they play. So for me, I think Brighton are a little overpriced at home. I'd be looking to back Brighton, and tying in with the number of goals we're sort of expecting in the match, maybe Brighton 1-0 sounds like a decent bet to me.
7-1 Brighton to win the game 1-0. Interesting what Mike says about the majority of the cash being for the draw at 11-5 at this moment in time, recording this on Thursday afternoon, and the 2-2 draw 18-1. I'd be astonished, Derek, if we get four goals in this game.
Yeah, if it's a draw, it's 0-0 or 1-1, isn't it? Yeah, I'm surprised anybody backs the draw, and if you're going to back the draw, why do it early? The price ain't going to change, is it, for this draw? Strange, and that does puzzle me, that. I'm trying to work out why Southampton are favourites for this game. Most overrated outfit since Liz Hurley wore that safety pin one. Every time I've seen them, I just can't believe how poor they are. The opposite applies for Brighton. I've only seen them two or three times this season, but they've looked a tidy side each time, and well, more than tidy against West Ham last week. That was a tremendous performance. They look like a team that will give anyone a game, won't get rolled over by anybody, no matter how illustrious the opposition. And Southampton certainly don't fall under that category. 11-5 at Brighton, I think it's way, way too big. I'm on them all day long.
For those of you listening that were born in the 90s, by the way, Liz Hurley used to be an actress.
Did she? Used to me.
Actress and model, a bit of cross between both. Brighton 11-5, the draw 11-5 with Southampton in the betting at 13-10. Derek definitely with Brighton at 11-5, and Mike going the same way as well. Brighton by a goal to nil is 7-1. Leicester versus Everton, 4 p.m. kickoff on Sunday. This one, Leicester 23-20, the draw 23-10, Everton 12-5. enhancements. Jamie Vardy to score and Leicester to win was 2-1. That's now 9-4. And Wayne Rooney to score and Everton to win was 9-2. That's been enhanced to 5-1. Derek, a tale of two managers with Claude Puel putting signature to paper, and he's been given a 3-year deal by Leicester City. And David Unsworth has got the job, not on a permanent basis, Derek, but it could become permanent if the players respond to his instruction, shall we say.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you're a Leicester fan, the appointments of Puel has not exactly set the pulse racing, has it? Then again, look what happened the last time Leicester made a managerial appointment that nobody thought was a good idea. A couple of seasons later, they went and won in the league. When you look at Puel, he doesn't look like a Premier League manager. He looks more like the man who your wife marries just after divorcing you. And you know when he sits on the touchline making notes, those notes are nothing to do with the game. They're the names of divorcees he's considering marrying. He just looks like that kind of guy, doesn't he? Don't trust him. Unsworth, who knows? I mean, you know, he could be anything. He could be the manager Everton need. But you've got to doubt it at the moment, given he's got no experience. It's a tough game to call this. I said at the beginning of the season, after watching Everton against Man City when they drew 1-1 and Calvert-Lewin played up front for them and had an absolute worldie of a game, I thought, this is a team I'm going to back away from home. I don't think they've hardly got a point since then. But with a new manager, there's always a new manager impact, isn't there? Leicester are beatable. I mean, the same could apply for Leicester, of course, a new manager impact. Leicester are beatable. And I think Everton are a better side than they're looking at the moment. You look at their squad, they're tidy players there. They're going to improve. They're going to go up the table. And I think at 12-5, they're almost worth a bet here. I couldn't touch Leicester at these odds. It's a tough one to call this, but at the odds, I'll go for Everton.
I get the feeling, Mike, with this game as well, from a punting perspective, is it a match you expect? I know that TV games attract more money anyway, yeah. But are punters going to be a little bit cautious with two new managers?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I think the way Everton have been the last few games or the whole season, you might say, people are still back in Leicester. They think that Everton aren't going to turn it round. Maybe news to Derek's ears. But, yeah, I mean, I think Leicester, odds against at home, people might sort of think, well, look how good they've been in the past. Mm. They're playing an Everton side that's not been good at all recently. So that's a decent bet, according to the betting public. For me, I think you might well see, dependent on if Puel's taking charge at the weekend, I'm not sure, you might see two teams set up just not to lose. So, particularly with Unsworth and Everton, he'll want to turn their form around. So, I've picked out the 0-0 at half time, which was available at 15-8. So, I think for me, if both teams set up not to concede and it's a bit of a tight game, that might well look like a great bet once we get into the match.
15-8 it is, 0-0 at half time. Check out the half markets, full range of markets on each of these televised Premier League games as well, all available #yourodds also. So if you have a bet but it's not on the website yet or it's not on the app, do tweet using the #yourodds to @WilliamHill, and the traders like Mike will try and price it up. Burnley versus Newcastle completes the weekend, a Monday night kickoff, and Burnley are 9-5 to win this game. The draw 21-10, Newcastle 13-8. Chris Wood to score and Burnley to win was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 100-30. And if you think Newcastle are going to win, but both teams are going to score in the game, that's available at 9-2. Newcastle are without a win, Mike, in their last four away visits to Turf Moor in the league. They've lost three of those and drawn one. But they are building a solid foundation under Rafa Benitez. I mean, just one of the eight Premier League goals that Newcastle have conceded this season have come in the first half. Benitez knows how to put a side out there to frustrate the opposition early on in a match.
Yeah, absolutely he does. We've seen that time and time again. I had this game down to be a low-scoring affair. It might well be in the same sort of vein as last week's Monday night match, where we saw a wonder goal win it. Yeah. So Burnley haven't been great at home. Newcastle are a better side at home, and they're playing away. So if Chris Wood's not playing for Burnley, I do wonder where the goals might come from for them. Mm. And similarly, if Newcastle just don't want to lose, then we could have a 0-0 on our hands, potentially.
8-1, big price for the 0-0 draw in this game. David, we all know about your love affair with Rafa Benitez. Admittedly, it's one-sided, that love affair. We all know about it, though, Derek. And he's done fantastically well with Newcastle this season so far.
He has a shaky start he had, and he was under pressure, but they've climbed the table and they look at a team that, well, you know, a bit like Brighton, they'll give anybody a game. Well, what odds, by the way? Sean Dyche, Burnley, Newcastle, Rafa Benitez. What odds both managers will be Merseyside managers next season? Dyche at Everton, yeah. Rafa at Liverpool. I'd love that. Well, I'd love the second part of it. Yeah, at this game, you give me four goals of it and I still wouldn't be confident about predicting the outcome. I could say the same about every match I preview, to be honest. It's going to be a low score. I noticed that under 1 point. I'm surprised that Newcastle are favourites, by the way, given Burnley done so well this season. Slight favourites, albeit. But under 1.5 goals is 2-1. Yeah. I like that. I like the look of that. That looks like an under 1.5 game all day long, this one.
Come on then, chaps. Let's get stuck into the naps. It's not been a thrilling start to the season, Derek.
I so nearly went for Brighton, didn't I? 4-1. So close to going for them.
You've had a couple of weeks like that, Derek, where you've chosen between two potential selections and one's won at a big price and the other one's been beaten.
Yeah, I've been unlucky. Not great pickings, are they, this week? I mean, the way Watford performed against Chelsea last week... They look good things to beat Stoke, but 21-20, a little bit on the short side. I think Tottenham are good things to beat United. I'm going to go for them at 11-5.
11-5 Spurs, the pick for Derek. Mike, what's your nap?
Well, Derek's actually mentioned it. I was looking, and Watford, since they got beat 6-0 by Man City, they seem to have turned it around. Silva's got them well organised. They've got some pacey players that are good at attacking on the break. And I mean, what can you say about Stoke, really? They're not in good form at all. Again, they conceded 7 against Man City, but they've not really turned it round, losing 2-1 at home to Bournemouth. So if the sort of form they're in continues, they could be in real trouble. But yeah, I'm going for Watford at 21-20 to beat Stoke. I think it's a great bet, and if you're looking for a bigger price, even look at the -1 handicap, because I think that pace could really trouble the Stoke defence.
I agree, I love that bet. Watford at 21-20. You know what I'm going to go with? I'm going to go with West Brom +2 at home against Manchester City. I think a lot of City's players played 120 minutes midweek.
Yeah.
If there's one man that's going to stifle that attacking talent, it's going to be Tony Pulis. So West Brom +2 on the handicap market, which means if they win the game, draw the game, or get beaten by one, your bet's still a winner. And it's 10-11, West Brom +2. That treble, Tottenham, Watford, West Brom +2 pays 11.52-1.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, it's a pleasure to welcome Jerry Cox onto the line and onto the podcast. He's a journalist and broadcaster at Haters Teamwork. And first of all, it's a warm welcome to you, Jerry. How are you doing, sir?
Very good, yes. Welcome to you two guys as well. And thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. I don't know where to start because we've had such an exciting... for once, we've had such an exciting Carabao Cup. A couple of days on Tuesday and Wednesday, particularly Spurs' match against West Ham. That was a bolt from the blue.
Well, it was a throwback. I mean, I've been covering Spurs for a long time, and this was a real sort of chink of light into what was the old Spurs. Really, you know, just when you think they're starting to sort of prove to be an irresistible force, they show the old failings of particularly. Letting a lead slip. I think I can't remember the first time or the last time they were two up and failed to win a game or lost a game under Pochettino. So that was a big thing. But also, you've got to maybe take into account that perhaps Pochettino, with his pre-match comments, suggests the Carabao Cup's not high on his priorities. And, you know, they might be not unhappy to be out of it, but the manner of defeat, as well as, you know, losing to West Ham, who are sort of big rivals, was a bitter pill to swallow for those fans. So it makes this weekend's game against United a really interesting one, I think.
And, Jerry, you were there for the Jose Mourinho rant last weekend after the game against Huddersfield. What does that achieve from a managerial perspective, in your opinion? Mourinho often wears his heart on his sleeve, and he's come out and lambasted his players following their shocking defeat against Huddersfield.
Yes, I mean, it was one of those days, you know, you have to say, it was classic. It was a lovely old-fashioned game of football. The wind was driving and the rain, and Huddersfield got amongst United early on, and, you know, even when the team coach arrived, the Huddersfield fans were booing the players. So, I mean, it was one of those days, and you could see United didn't really fancy it, and I think that's what Mourinho sort of went to town against afterwards. You know, he really sort of railed against the attitude of his players. So, you know, what he's looking for is a reaction. You can do it once, maybe twice. You can't do that every week, you know, blame your players. And, you know, in the past, he's done it occasionally. He did it towards the end of his days at Chelsea, and we all know how that ended. He called out one or two last weekend. He called out, if you remember, Luke Shaw, particularly last season. And poor Luke hasn't really recovered. You know, he's not got back in the picture, and you can't really see him getting back in. So, you know, you wonder if he gets the response he wants this weekend, and obviously it's a huge game, because I think Spurs can go top if they win, and United sort of create a little bit of space if they win. I'd look at it and think, well, that's probably got draw written all over it, perhaps, because it's two teams who need it badly, and they'll be going hammer and tongs. But I don't think Jose can afford to really have one of these rants too often. You know, maybe one more, maybe two more, and then the players will start getting a bit unsettled by it.
And Derek, Jerry correctly pinpoints the moments when it was changing for Jose Mourinho at Chelsea. He did have a go at the players once too often, and it soured the dressing room. I don't think we're at that stage yet with Manchester United. And maybe something that you talked about a couple of seasons ago on the podcast, the quality of Paul Pogba. It's not been really mentioned that much in the press how much they are missing him, but they were exposed in midfield against Huddersfield last weekend.
Well, it was a diabolical performance. But his lambasting of the players illustrates to me something I said earlier on when we were previewing the United game, Dave. He is yesterday's man. You can't put the players in public now, and when you need them in the trenches with you, they'll just wave goodbye to you. You can't do that these days. He's yesterday's man, and you've turned United into a yesterday's team. I think Andy said last week on the podcast, United are weakened when Marouane Fellaini isn't playing. Has it come to that? Fergie must be turning in his off licence. I mean, you know, it's pretty much talk show now for Mourinho. It's a slideshow presentation for Mourinho. Slide one, hoof it up to the big man. Slide two, see slide one. I mean, it's awful. United fans must be wondering what they've got. They loved him when he came. I don't think they love him now, and I'm pretty sure the players don't. You know, there's a growing trend with Mourinho. Not a growing trend, it's been present throughout his career. When you get great results, it's the manager gets the credit. When they get the bad results, the players get the blame. He won't last. You know what? I've got a feeling he won't be there at the end of the season.
Wow, that would be something if Mourinho went before the end of this campaign. That's the big game of the weekend. Spurs travelling to Old Trafford to take on Manchester United. But it's a big weekend for both Merseyside clubs in the Premier League as well. Let's start with Everton, who have got rid of Ronald Koeman. They've brought in David Unsworth for the time being as caretaker manager, with maybe a look to making it permanent if results work out for them. What went wrong for Ronald Koeman at Everton, Derek? Because there was plenty of optimism when he came to the club. He'd done a decent job at Southampton. But when you spend £140 million in the summer, you expect improvement, not to drop like a stone through the league.
Yeah, well, the problem was not replacing Lukaku. I'm not the biggest fan of Lukaku, but he gave Everton a focus, which they've sadly lacked them. You know, and he just couldn't get the player that he wanted. He wanted Giroud, couldn't get him, and he didn't have a plan B. In a way, you feel a bit sorry for him. I mean, the signings he made, they turned out to be awful, but no one said that when he signed them. I mean, you know, Michael Keane looked a shrewd signing, guilty Sigurdsson too. Maybe it was just too many signings. I think his big problem, though, at Everton was the fact that he never seemed to be an Everton manager. I think one of my colleagues at the Mirror wrote earlier today, it seemed like Koeman felt he was too big for Everton. Should be glad to have him rather than the other way around. I remember when Roy Hodgson turned up at Liverpool, the first thing he said was, well, I hope this doesn't upset Sir Alex, you know, because I'm a big friend of his. I mean, it was no coming back from that. And I think some of the things that Koeman said and did, you know, Everton, he never endeared himself to Everton fans, but he won't be out for work for long because it's Halloween soon. So he's renting out his head as a pumpkin.
Oh, that's harsh.
That's harsh. That's one last blow for Ronald Koeman, I think, on this podcast. Next permanent Everton manager, betting available here with William Hill. David Unsworth is the 2-1 favourite to be permanent Everton boss. Sean Dyche is 5-2. Thomas Tuchel has been well backed in the last few days. 4-1. Marco Silva is 5-1. Sam Allardyce 7-1. Carlo Ancelotti is 8. David Moyes is 10-1. And it's 12-1 and bigger the rest. Caretaker and interim managers will be deemed winners if they take charge for 10 consecutive competitive games. So that's the terms and conditions as far as the betting is concerned. And, Jerry, I think the club is definitely behind Unsworth. And I think the fans, because he has a long-standing history at the club, are definitely going to be willing to give him a chance.
Yeah, I mean, just following on Derek's point there, you know, he's an Evertonian through and through. And I think in times of turmoil, you want to have someone you can trust that you know is going to get a bit of support from the players, from the fans. The board will give him the support as long as he's, you know, getting some results. And I mean, you've got to look at it. It's a little bit like Leicester last year. The first priority is get away from the relegation zone. You know, forget whether you want to play a certain brand of football or in the long term what your five-year vision might be. Your first job is you've got to get halfway up that table at the very least. So he's got the position. Interesting game on Sunday against Leicester where Claude Puel's just gone in, which is probably a little underwhelming for a lot of their fans and followers.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, going back to Coop, the thing with Unsworth, as you say, he's got the backing there. Let's see if he can do what Shakespeare did at Leicester. Whether it turns out to be the long term job, and you know, by next summer, that by next this time next year, they're looking for someone else. Who knows? But their priority is to get out of trouble. And Shakespeare did it brilliantly with Leicester last year, and I could see maybe Unsworth doing that. Just going back to Koeman, I mean, one of the points I noted was towards the end of last season, they played at West Ham, who were struggling badly and leaking goals, and it was a 0-0 draw at the Olympic Stadium. It was a shocker. And all that Bilic did very cleverly was he just closed down the supply lines to Lukaku. And that, you know, as Derek said, there was no plan B. It's a bit like the Mourinho idea, you know, just get out to the big man. There was no plan B. And once Lukaku went, and, you know, I know today he said in a Dutch paper that, you know, he had Oliver Giroud in the room at one stage but couldn't get the deal over the line. If he could have replaced Lukaku's goals, great. But you got the idea. He was a little bit one-dimensional in his planning. And I think after that game at West Ham, he threw the players under the bus. He said, if I could have subbed them all at half-time, I would have done. You know, so I don't... If we're going back to Jose here. You've got to be careful with calling your players out in public. You know, I noticed last night Pochettino, although the team capitulated, he just said, look, it's my responsibility. I'm completely responsible. I'm making rotations. I'm making changes. You know, that's, as Derek said, that's what the modern manager has to do. You've got to tread on eggshells with his players. And you've got to take responsibility. And if it means the chop, it means the chop. You know, and that's harsh reality in this current climate.
Let's move across Stanley Park. We've talked about what's happening at Goodison. But what's happening at Anfield, Derek? Because I think there's starting to become doubts about Jurgen Klopp and his suitability to Liverpool. I mean, after 78 games in charge, Jurgen Klopp has picked up 137 points. Brendan Rodgers picked up 148 points. Rafa Benitez had 144 points. So that optimism when he arrived, especially in the first 6 months of his tenure at Liverpool, Derek, that's beginning to ebb away.
Well, it's ebbed away, to be honest. Klopptimism has vanished on Merseyside. And, you know, there's a lot of goodwill towards, because watching Liverpool is great. You know, when they're on form, they're fantastic going forward. But that's only half of football. And, you know, even the people with no clue of football, no offence, Everton fans, they know that there's three mistakes that Klopp has made. Mistake A, not getting a decent goalie. Mistake B, not beefing up that defence. Mistake 3, paying 40 million quid for Oxlade-Chamberlain. The third of those, that's unforgivable. That's the most unforgivable sin in my eyes. People are saying, well, he should have got a new centre-half. Well, it's an absolute knack that Van Dijk will be coming in January. It's an absolute knack, because if he wasn't, Klopp would have got a new centre-half. But he's obviously thought to himself, well, he's coming in January, we'll limp by until then. You know, we'll save our money. That's fine, if he'd have done that, that's fine. But he then went and paid 40 million for Oxlade-Chamberlain. I can never understand that. When he goes, that will be the big question mark about him. And going off, you know, they've lost a few big signings, a few big players through injury. Adam Lallana, Sadio Mane. You know, they're big players who are out. You know what? I've got a feeling we won't even. At the current rate of points gathering, Liverpool, right? They've got 13 points from 9 games. That's 2 fewer than Watford, 1 less than Newcastle. At that current rate of points gathering, they'll finish the season on 54 points. That's enough only to finish ninth in 4 of the last 5 seasons. So, you know, things will change. If that's the story of Liverpool's season, he won't get any more time in my eyes.
Do you think, Jerry, that they should have cashed in on Philip Coutinho as well? Because that was the big summer story. His proposed move to Barcelona, the club came out and said, we're not going to sell him under any circumstance. But that would have generated 110 million, 120 million for him to have the ability to spend in the transfer window and bring in what they needed, really, Jerry, which was new defenders.
Well, exactly. It's one of those things that, in theory, yes, but you've only got to look at what happened when, let's say, Spurs sold Gareth Bale and they brought in 7 players, and really the only one who stuck around was proved to be anything of a success was Christian Eriksen. Liverpool, with the Suarez money, bought a raft of players. I mean, some have hit and some have missed the target. So, you know, it's not necessarily if they'd have sold Coutinho, they'd have brought in a whole new defence that would have worked. And you've got to be a bit careful about trying to bed in that many players that quickly. But, you know, you keep coming back to this point about the defence. And I think last week there was a very good analysis in The Observer, actually, on Sunday, ahead of the Spurs game, and they showed the sort of comparisons with Pochettino and Klopp in the sort of 2 or 3 years they've been there, and the stats, and there were real similarities all the way through until it got to goals against. And even now, you look at today, I think the table, 6 goals Spurs have conceded so far, Liverpool 16, that's almost 3 times as many. And you simply can't build a championship, any sort of title winning team, on a leaky defence. And it's the first thing Pochettino turned around at Tottenham. You know, they were a similar team, good going forward, terrible at the back. And he just made them very hard to score against. And Chelsea last year were the second best defence. They won the league. The year before that, you know, Leicester were very tight at the back. It's teams that don't concede goals that will win titles or will challenge for them. And Liverpool really won't do that. Now, whether Klopp has got the sort of blind spot about defenders that we've seen for a long time with Arsene Wenger, where he just doesn't seem to really care or be able to spot a defender, that's a real sort of blind spot for him. I don't know whether that's true for Klopp, or he just hasn't prioritised, or he really wanted Van Dijk, but I don't think he's the answer on his own. You know, you're talking about you need a big, a solid unit. It's a back five. And 4 of those are Rodgers players, as it stands. It's probably more than 1 or 2 that needed. I would have thought a complete clear out.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and for my championship nap this week, there was actually quite a lot to choose from. For example, the draw between Middlesbrough and Reading certainly looks intriguing, albeit Borough, of course, had to travel to and from Bournemouth midweek. Cardiff at 8-13 to beat Millwall. We know how good Cardiff are at home. And I do like the look of Preston at 23-20 to beat Brentford as well, albeit, of course, Brentford haven't lost any of their last 5 games. However, in the end, I opted to go with Derby draw no bet at 6-4. They're 9-4 in the match betting market. Why? Well, Derby's form has improved markedly. Admittedly, that's come at home because, of course, they've only won away at Bolton Wanderers so far this season. And yeah, Norwich lost their opening home game, but since then have not really been particularly easy to play at Carrow Road. In fact, have kept 4 clean sheets out of 5. But I think Norwich's exploits midweek, the extra time game against Arsenal, might just take too much out of their legs, and therefore Derby could be really good value. My nap of the week in the Championship is Derby draw no bet. So that's the Championship. Let's go to Gav Pushalovsky for his thoughts on League One.
My nap selection this weekend is all about what could be a feisty, fiery affair, Lancashire affair at the DW Stadium between Wigan in second and Blackburn in sixth. There are 12 points separating these two sides at the moment, but Blackburn do have two games in hand on Wigan. This is a great opportunity for Wigan to extend that gap further over their Lancashire neighbours. And also, with Shrewsbury drop points, Wigan could return back to the top of the table. Wigan are winning plenty, scoring plenty. 3-1 away at Blackpool, 3-0 at home to Southend, 2-1 away at Scunthorpe, 2-0 at home to Walsall, regularly scoring over 1.5 goals, with goals from Grigg and Powell and even Dunkley from the defence away at Blackpool. Tony popping up with a goal or two as well. And Blackburn are good for a goal away from home, scoring in every single away game so far, apart from last time out in a 1-0 defeat at Oldham. So I think there's going to be goals between Wigan and Blackburn. Wigan are 5-6, that's okay, but we can do better. Wigan to win, over 2.5 goals, 2-1. But my nap selection is Wigan to win and both teams to score at 100-30. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
World for choice this week, so just got to make sure you get the right selection. Swindon, Accrington, Lincoln, Carlisle, Notts County and Luton is my prescribed 75-1 sixfold. Let's just hope literally half the games don't end in draws like they did last week. Just pipping Notts County to the nap this week is, for the first time this season, Carlisle. It's largely because they're playing at Chesterfield, the league's bottom club who've not adapted to their new league at all well, and sadly now have to cope without the online Jordan Flores, who's been an almost ever-present in their midfield, but might need surgery after a horrible-looking car crash in midweek. Even with him, Chesterfield's only win on home turf this season was against Port Vale, during Vale's famous run of 2 points from 11 League Two matches earlier this season. Other than that, one draw, 5 defeats on home turf, the last 3 of those to Morecambe, to Cheltenham and to Yeovil, and in each of those fixtures, Chesterfield gave the visitors their first away win of the season. There are 3 other sides who've only won one home match this season. Carlisle are one of them. Yet unlike their hosts, they lie in mid-table because their away form is sparkling and includes 3 wins in their last 3 trips to Crewe, to Crawley and to Colchester. They didn't win this season at Lincoln, Coventry or Accrington, all top 10 sides with good home form, but they have won every other away league fixture, and at odds against 6-5 against a side 4 points adrift at the bottom of the table and 6 points short of safety already, I'm backing Carlisle to win away again.
And with the musings of Al Ross, we reach the end of the podcast. I've enjoyed it. I hope you have too. Thank you for tuning in and listening. If you want to get this podcast weekly, go to audioboom.com and type in The Punt, or alternatively, you can catch us on iTunes. Again, type in William Hill and you can get this podcast delivered weekly. Check out all the betting for the football this weekend by going to sports.williamhill.com, or alternatively, check us out on the William Hill app. That's it then, folks. Good luck with your football betting with William Hill this week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.